Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. My name is Trevor Sikkema. With me is Ben Solak, and we are on day two of week two of the 2019 guest mock draft. I'll just go over the list right now for you guys so we can knock it out. Kyler Murray went number one overall. Nick Bosa went two. Josh Allen went three. Quinnen Williams four. Ed Oliver five. Dwayne Haskins six. That was a bit of a surprise there. Jonah Williams seven. Sort of a surprise there too. Montez Sweat eight. TJ Hockenson nine. Devin White went 10. And then last episode, we had Devin Bush. Joe Goodberry picked Devin Bush for the Cincinnati Bengals. And then Owen Reese picked Brian Burns for the Green Bay Packers. And that brings us up to today. Ben, you said before that this Dolphins pick could literally go any way. So, I mean, are you still, did you sleep on it? Did you think about who this was going to be? Is this any more clear to you or what?
Firstly, I'd like to commend you for remembering the list of players this time.
You know,
congratulations.
It is my job as a professional to remember.
Yes. And fortunately, you've never forgotten once, as it is your job. But no, I still feel very much so. Like, you know, the Dolphins are in a place where clearly they're smashing a bit of a reset button.
For sure.
I think it's Mina Kimes of ESPN calls it the fish tank, which I think is pretty cool. And so, yeah, you're at a point where you can get best player on the board. You can get a big culture guy, which obviously will matter for Brian Flores. So, yeah, like, obviously the board's going to kind of dictate it. You know, this is just one iteration of something that can go a million different ways come the end of April. But, yeah, this obviously could go a bajillion different ways, which is why we have people to help us.
Correct. There are people smarter than us who know the Dolphins better than us. One in particular, who we have on the podcast today with us. And, Ben, I'm super excited with this one because this is a Gator great that we have on the podcast.
Gator great.
With us today, Safid Dean. He covers the Miami Dolphins for the Sun Sentinel. Safid, how you doing, man? Thank you so much for joining the show and enlightening us on everything that's going on down in Miami.
Trevor, Ben, thank you for inviting me. This might have been the most flattering intro I've ever had for a podcast. So I want to thank you guys from that, for the bottom of my heart. Thank you.
Okay, well, you know, that just means you got to live up to it. So
there's nothing funnier to me than the fact that pretty much all we said, or at least all that I said, was Gator great, and I was like, listen, that's the best thing
that's
ever said.
That's the best thing.
I love Gator great, man.
Done. That's all I needed.
Never been close to the university even once, and I dropped Gator great with just unbelievable frequency.
You know, that's just how it goes. All right, so obviously, there's a lot of stuff going on in Miami. I mean, it's kind of been, it seems like the same-ish. I mean, the narrative around Miami, let's just face it, it's mediocre. It's 8-8, it's 7-9, it's 9-7. It's one of those three records every single year. It's just about as lukewarm as the Gulf of Mexico is itself. So what's been different about this offseason for the Miami Dolphins and why things could really start to change, if you do think they are really going to start to shift in one way or the other for the Dolphins?
I think this offseason, particularly after they ended the season 7-9 with a blowout loss to Buffalo and the young GOAT Josh Allen,
of course,
they realized what they've been doing for the past 10 years when Steve Ross bought this team in 2009 has not been working. You get a new coach, let's get a couple free agents in. Let's try to sign somebody. Let's try to stick with what we have and draft somebody like a Ryan Tannehill. A couple years goes by. That didn't work. You know what? Let's hire a new coach. Hey, let's sign a couple of free agents. Let's stick with what we have in Ryan Tannehill. And you know what? That doesn't work. Let's hire a new coach and do it all over again. And it just has not worked for the Dolphins. I think they finally realized that they need to do an extensive rebuild, something to tear the roster down like they've done this offseason, let free agents walk, you know, keep yourself out of the first couple rounds of free agency this year and go young. And I think the Dolphins have a plan in mind. They have a quarterback in mind. And I think they have a structure of what they want to build in. And this is all credit to the new general manager, Chris Greer, who's had this title before. He did have to answer to Mike Tannenbaum, former executive vice president of the team last year in the last 3 years. But Chris Greer has been in this organization for 10, 15 years, man. He's been on the totem pole of their organization in regards to the front office, in charge with draft decisions the last couple of years, but he hasn't been in the full control of all the football operations like he is now. And they've gotten rid of Ryan Tannehill. They got the number 13 pick in this draft. They seem primed to make a big splash in 2020 as well. And so far, the Dolphins seem pretty, pretty adamant about this rebuild that they want to do to get out of mediocrity, like you said, Trevor.
So, interesting. You said there, like, you know, they have an objective in mind. You said they have a quarterback in mind. And so looking for you, obviously, it's likely Ryan Fitzpatrick. Now he's coming in. He's going to be the incumbent starter, potentially win a few games, likely lose a lot more. But then also there's the upcoming draft, and there's the names like Kyler Murray, Dwayne Haskins, and even Drew Lock and Daniel Jones, players we expect to go off the board in round one. Now, obviously, in this specific mock, Kyler's gone, Haskins is gone. But do you think if any of those quarterbacks dropped in the range of 13, the Dolphins would entertain a trade up? Or is this fully, listen, we're passing on 2019, we're accumulating capital, we're accumulating cash, we'll go for a quarterback in 2020? What do you think the plan is at that position?
I think the plan is to look at the 2020 quarterbacks, not even these 2019 quarterbacks. But let's talk about these guys for a second here. The Dolphins, Kyler Murray is going number one, as you guys have in this mock draft, and as many people think going, because that seems like a match made in football heaven between him and Cliff Kingsbury in Arizona, right? Josh Rosen may be on the market, but the Dolphins aren't interested in him. You look at Dwayne Haskins, the Raiders. I think the Raiders, the Broncos, and the Bengals, and the Giants, have the most, they have the most cachet here to really throw the wretches into the draft where it comes to quarterback. Do the Raiders take Haskins? Do they trade it for Murray? Do the Giants, you know, come into finally taking Haskins after putting up so many smoke screens the last couple weeks? What do the Broncos do? Do they take Drew Lock? Do they take Daniel Jones? Do the Bengals find somebody to replace Andy Dalton? That leaves the Dolphins on the outside looking in at 13. And I think their quarterback that they're eyeing is in the 2020 draft. He's not even in this draft. I think Drew Lock, maybe he'll fall to the Dolphins in 13. I don't think that's a pick the Dolphins should do with the pick I'll review later. But the Dolphins have their eyes on three quarterbacks in 2020. There's Jake Fromm from Georgia. There's Justin Herbert from Oregon. And there's Tua Tagovailoa. From Alabama. There we go. Gator great, baby. But we're going to go for the Alabama kid. That's the Dolphins. The Dolphins have their eye on them. And, you know, you'll hear it from the top of the organization. They understand that they need to take a step back to really take a huge step forward. Players and coaches like, you know, Brian Flores are pretty adamant about not tanking specifically. But the Dolphins are going to have a lot of young players next year, man. And they're going to try to win. But I think just talent itself, they're going to lose. And they set themselves up for Tua in 2020. The Dolphins franchise could be set for the next 10, 15 years.
Listen, nobody respects the long-term tank more than me. So whether or not they admit it, I can kind of already see what they're doing. And it's bold. I like it. But you mentioned Brian Flores there, so I want to just talk to you about him really quick. He's had it felt like a weird scenario, because it was like the Patriots were still in the playoffs, so the Dolphins couldn't announce who their head coach was, and then it's almost like they're just in kind of like this purgatory where, okay, it's reported that he's probably going to be the guy, but it never happened until so much further later. You wonder if anything, you know, weird things happen in the NFL all the time. If things get hung up and maybe he doesn't come down here, then they don't really have anybody. That whole situation was just kind of weird to me. But he is here now. He is the head coach. What were your first impressions of him? Obviously, you've had the introductory press conferences. I assume he was at the owners' meetings and everything, so that was another chance to probably get to talk to him a little bit and just get to know his philosophy and who he's going to be as a head coach. What are your overall impressions on him early on, just from coming to from New England to Miami, and what he wants to do with this franchise?
I would also add, Trevor, I would also add about the whole Josh McDaniels thing a year ago.
Yeah.
In the same organization. Right. You know, and they're wondering what's going on here with the playoffs. Are the Chiefs going to get the ball in overtime? You know, what are, and how much longer they had to wait to hire him, but they finally hired him February 2nd, the day after the Super Bowl.
That's a long
that
time, man.
Couldn't celebrate his win with his team, right?
Yeah.
He couldn't even celebrate his Super Bowl win with his team. He flew down literally that night or the next morning to Miami, finalized the deal, signed the contract, was introduced to media, and he's been hitting the ground ever since. I got to give it to Brian Flores. I've actually found out at the end of the first month, his mother, who was profiled during the Super Bowl right before Flores got the job, she had breast cancer, and she actually recently died the first weekend of March. So you look at a guy like Brian Flores, was in the Dolphins organization for 14 years, 15 years, I believe, Made his way up to defensive play caller, made his way up to multiple Super Bowl championships under Bill Belichick, gets an NFL head coaching job, and a month later his mother dies. So he's in a real, you know, unique situation here. First-time NFL head coach, first-time hiring a coaching staff. You have this Dolphins rebuild on top of that, and you're in the same division with the mighty Patriots as well. But he has the temperament to really handle this job. He seems like a real straightforward guy. I think he's going to be a guy that players are going to command respect, that's going to command players' respect. And that's something that you want in an NFL locker room, especially with a bunch of young guys the Dolphins plan to have in the next couple of years or so.
Right. So now we talk about this team, and obviously we're framing it very much so in the rebuild. And so when I look through the roster and I see some young players that have really, you know, struggled to develop, struggled to get a great footing, like a Charles Harris immediately pops to mind. Then some young guys like a Xavien Howard, who's, you know, tremendous player. And then some, you know, Dolphins fans, like we have a Dolphins fan on staff and Kyle Krabs. He always complains that the fan base wants to try to move on from Howard and get something more for him and so on and so forth. When you look at this roster, and if I ask you to identify for me the cornerstones, the building blocks, hey, we're going to rebuild, but these are the players we're going to rebuild around. Who are those players on this roster, and what makes them those players who are going to stick through this process?
All right, for me, it's a handful of guys, and it's probably less than five, less than six maybe even five max, but Xavien Howard is definitely one of those guys. 11 picks in 16 games, his last 16 games he's played. Yeah. He's had some knee issues, but that 11 picks in the 16 games is the most of any DB in the league. Better than Ramsey, better than Josh Norman, better than everybody else who's getting paid top five money. And that's the big issue the Dolphins have to solve with him this offseason here. Do you give Xavien Howard 14, 15, maybe 16 mil annually to hold down the fort, hold down that corner? Because last year he was one of the best cornerbacks in the league, got a Pro Bowl bid as well. So I definitely think he's a big part of their rebuild. Laremy Tunsil, he's going to get a fifth-year option next month. Their first-round pick from a couple years back, you know, he slipped to them in that draft for those reasons, as we know. I wish I could explain it more than that. But Laremy Tunsil, he almost had a Pro Bowl year last year. He's a fixture on that offensive line, one that just lost Juwan James, who became the highest-paid right tackle in the league. He just signed a new deal with the Broncos. Those are two guys. I like Kenny and Drake. I like Minka Fitzpatrick. I like Kenny Stills a lot. I think he's a good guy, you know, a good player, a good guy, a real deep threat down the field too. But, you know, once you get past those little group of guys, there's not much else around this Dolphins roster. There's a lot of solid players, a lot of players who could be a solid number two behind a starter, players who really need to develop into, you know, starters in the NFL and key contributors here. So I'm interested to see how the Dolphins really go about this, because once the draft comes, they're also going to have to sign a slew of undrafted guys, some guys maybe from the AFL too, to really fill out their roster because of how inactive they've been in free agency as well. But as we just mentioned before here, guys, the plan here is in place, and we know what's going to happen in 2020. You just got to deal with the lumps in 2019 in the meantime.
Yeah, I figure the Dolphins might even be a team to like trade back, get like assets and be like, no, we'll trade back. Just give us next year's picks or something, like a bunch of next year's picks. So they got all the ammo to move to wherever they need to. So, all right, man. So I guess that brings us to on the clock. You've talked about the organization, the head coach, the direction that they're going. And I know that maybe this pick here at 13 won't mean a lot to next year, but it could be a really crucial part, obviously moving forward and into the future. So if the board falls like it has in this guest mock draft, who would you be taking for the Miami Dolphins here at number 13? And give us a couple reasons why this guy would be your pick.
All right. First, I'm going to keep building the suspense here for my pick because I like it. I like it. It's a good pick. But I just want to look back at the board here, guys, and say, look, like, is Devin White and Devin Bush going to play quarterback in Denver and Cincinnati? And those guys went really high off this board here. I'm looking at Haskins finally fell to the Giants. That's a good. I'm everything good with the top five. Kyler, Bosa, Allen, Quinnen is a monster. Ed Oliver is a monster. Those are probably three of my favorite guys. Bosa, Quinnen, and Ed Oliver there. I'm surprised at Denver, man. I'm surprised Denver and Cincy, whoever picked for you guys here in this mock draft, didn't pick a quarterback up. Now I'm stuck with Drew Locke. Am I going to pick up Drew Locke? Am I going to be the Dolphins GM of the past and pass up guys like Matt Ryan, you know, Drew Brees, we couldn't sign him there. So many Dolphins GMs have passed on so many quarterbacks and so many drafts to take other players at other positions. And now you're putting me in this position, gentlemen, but I'm going to pass on Drew Lock. I'm also surprised that Juwan... I'm going to pass on Drew Lock. He called himself Aaron Rodgers, and I was like, all right, that's all I needed to hear.
Wait,
bro.
He did? How did I miss that?
Yeah, at the combine.
Oh, wow.
He's like, you know, I throw off balance. I kind of look like Aaron Rodgers. That's what I compare myself to.
Yeah, that's good.
I was like, all right, bro. Also, I got a little, you know, animosity against him because he definitely did destroy our Gators trove. I'm not going to put that past anything new.
But I don't like bringing it up.
I'm surprised
so,
also. But besides Locke, man, I'm actually interested. I can't believe that Juwan Taylor, the kid out of Florida as well, best right tackle prospect in this draft.
Yep.
Especially a guy who's going to be top 15 consideration. You only get that for left tackle. You don't get that for right tackle. I'm surprised he's still around in this draft, and he's probably a player I would have taken, especially on an O-line where you're going to pay, you know, 1,000 snaps a year. You're going to play, you know, predominantly 80, 85, 90, sometimes 100% of the snaps of the year, whereas defensive guys are, you know, 50% or 70%. But I'm going defense here, gentlemen, and it's hard to pick between these two. But instead of I'm going to pick up for the Dolphins, I'm going to take Christian Wilkins, DC out of Clemson.
Who is the other one? You said it's hard to pick between these two. Who's the other one?
The other DN from Clemson, Clannon Farrell.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
oh, yeah?
Sure.
I like both those guys a lot, man. Christian Wilkins was the second best defensive player in that national title game behind Quinnen Williams.
Yep. No, I agree.
The Dolphins want to run a the Dolphins want to run a 3-4, 4-3 multiple thing on defense. I think Wilkins, you could put him as a nose tackle, you can put him as a DN on a 3-4. If you want to play some 4-3, you could play a regular tackle position there too. He's versatile. He's a great kid, man. He's got a master's degree. I heard he was what's the wide receiver's name from Clemson? Hunter Renfro? I think he was Hunter Renfro's, like, in his bridal party, man. That was pretty cool to hear about him.
Dude, the
he's
more
a substitute
that...
teacher the... in some of his spare time, man. He's got a great character guy that I think the Dolphins could really build around. And also, he's a freaking monster on defense.
I thought when Christian Wilkins decided to come back last year, I was like, dude, what are you doing? Like, you cannot raise your stock anymore. This is kind of who you are as a player. You've competed for national championships. You were a five-star high school player. And he came back in 2018. He looked even more polished and effective than he was before. He even looked like he had a little bit more juice to him than he had in past years. He's so, like, I can't find somebody who has a bad word to say about this kid. You know, whether it was him playing on offense or what he does off the field with his teammates and everything. Like, Christian Wilkins is just somebody's going to truly fall in love with this kid and take him top 15. I could very well see it being the Dolphins. Ben, do you agree?
Absolutely. And the thing is, like, we've said about Wilkins for a while now, like, maybe he's not ranked, you know, like, in the teens for, like, not for me, like, I know for other guys on staff, but because of what he brings from a culture perspective, which Safa did a really good job, I think, illustrating, he could go early because, like, especially a coach like Brian Flores, they're going to love Christian Wilkins, what he brings to the locker room. I think it makes a ton of sense.
Yep. No, I'm with you. I think it's a great pick. Safa, you did good, man.
Just give it to me right. Just give it to me right now, man. GM of the year. Just give it to me right now. I'll take it.
Locked
and bow
in.
Out of your podcast.
Listen.
Only took him 15
Gator
minutes.
Gator grade GM of the year. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
You're racking up all the titles here on this podcast. Safa, thank you so much for joining us, man. We really appreciated the insight. Hopefully we'll have you on again soon in this podcast.
We'll love to do it, guys. Thank you so much for your time.
All right, so there you go. That was the Dolphins pick at 13. Falcons are up next at 14. Man, if the Falcons just missed that last field goal on the very last play of the season, they'd be picking in, like, the top 10. But here they are at 14. We're going to have our special guest on to pick for the Falcons the way that nobody else can. Stick around, guys. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. Trevor and Ben here with you to finalize today's episode of the podcast, and we are now to the Atlanta Falcons, just to recap everything that's gone on. Kyler Murray went number one overall, Nick Bosa number two, Josh Allen number three, Quinnen Williams number four, Ed Oliver five, Dwayne Haskins six, Jonah Williams seven, Montez Sweat eight, TJ Hockenson nine, Devin White 10, Devin Bush 11, Brian Burns went 12 to the Packers, and then we just had Safadin on to pick for, and he picked Christian Wilkins to the Miami Dolphins. And that brings us to the Atlanta Falcons, who I believe I said right before as we kind of teased this little thing, if Matt Bryant would have just missed that last field goal on the very last play of the season, they would be picking about six or seven spots higher than they are right now. But here they are sitting at number 14. And to help us make the right pick at number 14, get us caught up with everything that's going on with the Falcons and what they might be looking at the draft, we have Gina Thomas here from SB Nation. Super excited about this. Gina, how are you doing? Thank you so much for joining the show with us.
I'm doing great, and thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's the Falcons season, as I've kind of like wrote about mock drafts and picks for the Falcons and everything, I look at this team and I go, man, this is a really talented Falcons team. So I kind of can't believe that their year ended up the way that it did. Like I said, if they would have just lost one extra game, they'd have been picking in the top 10. So really, I think my first question to you is just, what happened this year with the Falcons? Was it really just kind of really unlucky injuries that kind of mounted up? Or how did they kind of get to this point?
I think that the injuries are the easiest thing to point to. I mean, if you're losing, you know, you're both starting safeties, both starting guards, and your middle linebacker, who is really fundamental to your defensive success for most of the season, it's just too big of a deficit to make up. And so then I think that they made some odd decisions defensively with some of the replacements, like keeping Jordan Richards on the field for more than one snap was a big mistake. So it was, and yeah, I think that, so I think part of it can be attributed to coaching. We saw the team, you know, have some close games, but lose them because of questionable in-game decisions by Dan Quinn. So it was just kind of perfect storm of ruining my life every single Sunday.
Wow.
which is basically how you describe Falcons fandom anyway.
Incredible. Ever heard a Falcon sentiment toward your team? It's ruining my day every day of my life. But you brought up some of the questionable coaching decisions. It's two new coordinators. Well, three new coordinators if we count special teams, but we don't really. Obviously, Steve Sarkisian is out. Dirk Cutter is in, and Trevor can tell you a bevy of things about Dirk
Cutter. I'm sorry.
Marquin Manuel is out. Dan Quinn is going to take a heavier role now in the defense. What changes can we expect, I think, on the offensive and on the defensive side of the ball? I'll let you off the hook for special teams. What changes can we expect for those two units now with the new coaching staffs in place?
Yeah, I think that, you know, defensively it's going to be really interesting because I did mention some of Dan Quinn's tendency to make some questionable in-game decisions. And if he's devoting more attention to the defense, I think it's fundamentally important that he has somebody on staff that he can actually turn those other decisions, like clock management and things like that, over to, so that it's not too much for him. Offensively, it's going to be really interesting because they say that they're sticking with the sort of the zone scheme they've been running since Kyle Shanahan's time here started. But then they bring in these massive guards who are like well over 300 pounds. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I mean, they're both pretty athletic for their size, but it just, I think that we're going to see them shift at least slightly away from that zone blocking scheme and do things a little bit differently offensively. So I think that's going to be really interesting. And yeah, if you'll remember, Dirk Cutter was the offensive coordinator in Atlanta before he became the head coach in Tampa Bay. So yes, I'm very familiar with his tendencies too.
You're well aware.
I like Cutter. I think that he's a better coordinator than a head coach. And so I'm interested to see, because he did have a really good working relationship with Matt Ryan. He's obviously already got, you know, a working relationship with Julio Jones. And so I think it's going to be really interesting to see what they do on that side of the ball.
No, I mean, I totally kid, but I'm with you. I think that Cutter is a much better coordinator than he was a head coach. And, you know, being a first-time head coach in Tampa Bay, you could just tell some of the responsibilities were a little bit too much for him. I thought the offense, they had a creative pool of plays to call, maybe just didn't call the ones at the right time. I wonder if, you know, a lot of stress, pressure certainly down the stretch there for Tampa Bay kind of went into that, which is really natural. So I think that him going back to Atlanta with some familiar faces would be totally fine. But you talked about a little bit, some pieces of the roster there. You're right. They add Jamon Brown and they add James Carpenter. They re-signed Grady Jarrett with a franchise tag. Other than that, it was a pretty quiet free agency for the Falcons. Is that just because there really aren't a ton of needs on this team? Is that just the result of that?
I wish that were the case, but it's really because the Falcons are broke. They're so poor. Like, they, because Grady Jarrett currently under the tag, and because they decided for some reason that I do not understand to keep Vic Beasley on this roster to pick up his fifth year option. So he's making some absurd amount of money, like $12 million for this season. They're just really tied up against the cap. They still have to work out an extension for Julio Jones, which could be written in such a way that it would free up cap space now. Same thing with Brady. You know, they could still negotiate a long-term deal with him. But yeah, I think that just their purse strength kept them from making any significant moves in free agency this year.
Right. And like you said, keeping Vic Beasley on the roster hasn't made sense for a while now, and the fifth-year option ain't cheap. But hopefully the primary pass rusher for the Falcons becomes Tack McKinley, a growing young player. I want to talk about some of these other growing young players because, like you said, a lot of injuries on the defense, but that puts guys like DeMonte Casey in the spotlight, right? It's a fifth-round pick from a couple years ago. Foyesade Oluokun out of Yale, sixth-round pick out of last year. Some of these young pieces that we've seen on the defense so far, who should we expect to take a bigger role even as the team gets more healthy in 2019?
Yeah, I think that if there was one bright spot last year, it was seeing guys like KZ and Foye develop. They both have such high ceilings. KZ led the league in interceptions last year, was tied at the top. He was a ball hawk in college, too, so it's not surprising.
Right.
And this year, I think that we'll see him continue to develop. Some of the moves the Falcons made this offseason, deciding to let Robert Alford walk and also Brian Poole, opened up just some flexibility there. So I think we'll see Isaiah Oliver. He's a name to watch last year because he's going to start outside opposite Desmond Trufant. And because we'll have both of our safeties back, they're going to shift KZ into Brian Poole's old role. That's what I expect anyway. And so I think we'll see him playing in the slot. And it's a different position. So it's going to be interesting to see. He did a nice job of adapting to safety when he had to after Ricardo Allen lands on injured reserve. But yeah, adapting back to corner and seeing what he can do in that role, I think that's somebody to definitely keep an eye on.
I feel like there's a lot of different ways the Falcons could go about making this pick here at number 14. Before we get to you making the pick, which we'll get to in a second, who are some of the names, even if there's some of the guys who were off the board in this guest mock draft, that you've kind of been hearing the Falcons either targeting, or maybe it's just positions overall that you think they need. Are there really specific players or just positions that you think are really going to be a realistic target for here at 14?
Well, I would say that the biggest needs are definitely the defensive line across the board. They need guys for rotational guys, at least for the interior. And then they definitely need another defensive end. I mean, we've already talked about Vic Beasley, and if there's one thing I don't want to do, it's talk about Vic Beasley for an extended period of time because it's so frustrating. But Vic is a great guy. He just hasn't developed, and I think that we've seen enough to know that this is where he's going to stay. So I think they really need to get somebody who can rush the passer. That's been a perpetual need for Atlanta going back to the Mike Smith days. So I'm not terribly optimistic it'll get done this year, but that's what Falcons fans are all hoping for. And offensively, obviously, they did make moves in free agency to address the interior line, both guard positions. So they kind of have a plan there, but right tackle is still a big question for me. Right now, they've got Ty Sombrilo penciled in there, and he is a guy that Vic Beasley had like 5 sacks against when he was playing for Denver. And I guess that's the best way to sum up that I am not sure why the Falcons added this man to their roster in the first place. But, I mean, he showed last year, he looked decent for stretches. But I don't know that he's a long-term solution at right tackle. And so, I think that we will see them target an offensive lineman in the draft. If you have this much money invested in Matt Ryan, and not just Ryan, but your other skill positions on offense, they need guys who can open up running lanes so that so that the investment in Devontae Freeman is worth it. They need guys to keep Matt Ryan upright, because what is the point of having a top flight receiver like Julio Jones if Matt Ryan is flat on the ground 2 seconds after the ball is snapped? So I think that the line is definitely a huge need.
So with that said, I mean, you did a good job. I think they're highlighting some of the needs that they could go with this board falling the way that it has. Who's going to be your pick for number 14? and why, and just give us a little bit of why you think it'd be a good fit in this mock draft.
Well, with the 14th pick in the 2019
All right, Goodell. The Falcons. All right.
The Falcons will take Jawan Taylor, tackle out of Florida.
Okay.
And
all right.
I think that he is, you know, one of the best tackles in this draft. I didn't want to go offensive line with this pick. Mm-hmm. I really would have preferred to get Ed Oliver, but he was off the board. So
you aren't the only the only one. I swear, every time we talk to somebody who's coming on, goes, "Wait, is Ed Oliver available?" No, he's not. Sorry.
Yeah, and I thought that that was going to be the case. I mean, there's no way he's going to be hanging around at 14, but still, that's who I wanted. But Taylor, I think, is a very good player, and I think that he's a guy that can come in and instantly be a better option at right tackle than Tyson Brillo. So I just think that protecting Matt Ryan and making sure that the offense can do what the offense should be able to do has to be a priority, and for the Falcons, the best fit at this spot is Taylor.
Yeah, I like the pick. I know the Falcons.
Florida Gator pick?
As a Florida Gator grad. No, but I mean, like, even beyond the Florida thing, Juwan is so good. And I think the thing that bothers me the most when going through this process is a lot of people say, oh, he's a right tackle, so he's obviously not good enough to play left tackle. That's not a thing. I mean, we've said, I think, on this podcast before, you know, some of the best pass rushers in the NFL go up against right tackles. I mean, they purposely put guys like Von Miller, sometimes guys like Khalil Mack, against right tackles. And so you can't have a weakness at either tackle spot. I think Jawan Taylor is the best pass protector in the draft, and I think that that's a totally smart move for the Falcons to make something like that happen.
Yeah, the right tackle thing never scares me off. I wrote an article for SB Nation several years ago. I don't even think I worked there full-time yet, but it was about how teams really probably should start thinking about the right tackle position differently, because defensive coordinators do scheme their best player against that spot. And so you've got to have somebody on that side who can hold their own.
Wow, look at Gina, you were preaching the good word years ago. All right, thank you so much for joining us. That was great getting caught up on the Falcons. You know, I personally love the selection that you made. I think that something like that would really help the Falcons as well. So thank you so much for taking the time to join us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right, Ben, we're almost halfway done. We're almost halfway done.
Feels good.
It does feel good. It feels like it's flying by. So tomorrow we got picks 15 and 16. Make sure you guys tune into those and the rest of the mock draft picks. It's only going to get better and more interesting as players kind of come off the board. We might get some stretches and guys that you can't believe are going in different spots. So until then, you keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.